sacrificed his entire self. He said, we demand our human rights as your brother. There is no asking. We demand our human rights as ordained by God. And I would imagine it's the reason why there is this reverence for this young man whose legacy continues to inspire, empower, uplift people all around the world.
You're wearing all white today. Not black, to remember your father, the fact that he was assassinated, but white. Why?
Oh, you know, it's, you know, the spirituality. It's just a bunch of things. And I love my father. I love my mother so much. And, you know, whatever I can do to keep these legacies alive and thriving and, you know.
And tonight you'll be at the Audubon Ballroom, which your mother fought to save from destruction when Columbia was building its big biotech building. And there you have so many events honoring Malcolm X and Dr. Betty Shabazz.
And I want to say that my mother turned this place of tragedy into a place of triumph.
Dr. Ilyalsa Shabazz, on the 100th anniversary of the birth of Malcolm X. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars, and you're listening to KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Board of Directors meeting will be held on Monday, May 19th at 6 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, and today is Monday, the 19th of May, 2025, and I welcome you. Thank you for listening and for being a part of our morning conversations. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. Give us a call, check in, share your views, your perspectives, your thoughts, your inspirations. Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187. And today is the 19th of May. Lots of things are happening, and I hope that people are taking care of themselves and their communities and their loved ones. So much is happening, and it's so important to maintain our focus and to make sure that we create a community when there is so much that's happening, so much that is confusing. We need to focus, to settle, and to be determined to do the work that we are called to do. When there are so many people who are afraid, so many people who are alone, so many people who are challenged by all that they face. What can we do? There's so much that we can do. One thing that we can do is draw inspiration from those who went before us. Part of my conversation this morning is to encourage all of us to identify those individuals, those movements that continue to inspire us to transform our world. Certainly, we are in a unique situation wherever you are located, and the world seemed to be closing in that there seems to be little movement towards justice. But there are so many people who continue to do the work. And today, May 19th, is a time to pause and to reflect. For those who are listening live and who heard the program before, Democracy Now!, one of the features was the review, reflection on today, the 19th of May, which is the 100th birthday of Elhaj Malik El-Shabazz, Malcolm X, nee Malcolm Little. He was born today, 100 years ago. And for those of you who are in Portland, I want to suggest to you one thing you can do is participate in the Malcolm X 100 Observation and Memorial, which will take place at the historic Alberta House, which is located in Portland, between 6 and 8 p.m. Mr. Kent Ford, a Black Panther founding member here in Portland, will host an evening of reflection and conversation honoring the life and legacy of Malcolm X. That's sponsored by the Vanport Mosaic, and that will take place this evening at 6 to 8 p.m. at the historic Alberta House, 5131 Northeast 23rd. There, people will gather to reflect on Malcolm X, his legacy, and where we go from here. But I also want to note that today is not only the birthday of Malcolm X, but in this unique way in which the universe can draw us together, it is also the anniversary of the birth of Yuri Kochiyama. We'll talk more about Yuri, her friendship, revolutionary friendship with Malcolm X, her organizing, and what it means in terms of cross-cultural organizing and what we can learn from the legacy of both Malcolm X and Yuri Kochiyama. You're listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And let's go to our first caller. Good morning, Santiago. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm well. What are your thoughts?
Good. My thoughts is that we could really draw a lot from Malcolm X's legacy. You know, one of my favorite quotes of his is, if you stab someone, serving them justice isn't pulling the knife out. You know, you put a 9-inch knife in their back and you pull it out 6 inches, that's not justice. You know, if you pull it all the way out, that's not even justice. Justice begins at the healing of the wound, and they're not even attempting to pull out the knife, let alone recognize that it's there, you know. We've been going through 60 years of having the knife shoved in to the working class, into black and brown folks, you know, and having it shoved in, pulled out, and we're supposed to be thanking these politicians for doing such a great job when the suffering still exists.
Certainly.
And we need to stop being satisfied with that. He also said that, you know, you can't beg another man for your freedom. You know, you got to do it yourself. And right now, we got a lot of Democrats right now who are telling the working class people who are against this fascist state that the way to get our freedom is to beg for it.
Let me suggest for those of you who want to know more about Malcolm and his critique of the system, and just what Santiago was talking about, the political system. There's speeches and writings, but one that you might be interested in is, I think it's 1964, the Ballad of the Bullet.
Which is
strong. And also, about that same time, The Message to the Grassroots, which is each one is about an hour, but in infused with wisdom and wit and determination, give you some insight into Malcolm X thinking and organizing at that time.
Yes, absolutely. And I would definitely recommend to people that, you know, they read the ballot or the bullet, that you can find transcripts of it online. But, you know, he specifically talks about the, you know, he's a part of the 22 million black people who have been victims of Americanism, and that, you know, we see American democracy as hypocrisy. And, you know, we need to latch on to that now, because Malcolm X was telling us then that the system is corrupt and that it has no plan for black people, let alone people of any color, including white people. And, you know, and his friendship what was her name? Yui
Kochiyama. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. she was instrumental in him having it a more socialist and internationalist point of view, and you know, along with developing a Pan-Africanist aspect, which really broke him free from the hold of Elijah Muhammad.
Indeed.
And
okay.
Well, need that more than ever.
Well, thank you so much, Santiago. I'm going to go to another caller who's going to tell us more about both Yuri and Malcolm. I appreciate your call and for all that you are doing. Thank you so much. And let's go to our next caller, Lenita.
Hey, how you doing, Cecil?
I am well.
Healthy Malcolm X and Yuri Kochiyama's birthday today.
Okay, now you can tell us, who are these folks and why are we celebrating them?
Well, KBOO's former station manager, Jenna, and I did a segment on the correlations between Yuri Kochiyama, who is an icon in the civil rights movement, but didn't get the kind of, I think, validation and recognition that she deserves. There was a Seattle rap group, I wish I could be like Yuri Kochiyama. They did a very nice song about her when they met her. She just was an amazing woman. And when Malcolm X was assassinated February 21st, 1965, it was Yuri that was in the Audubon Ballroom when he was assassinated and cradled his head while he was dying. And in the Life magazine photo, they cropped her out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of like how history crops out people that don't meet their expectations. You know what I mean? And there's historically been a lot of tension between African Americans and Asian community, various segments of Asian community, because they're not monolithic, right?
Right.
Nor are black folks. So what really humbled me about their relationship is how she reached out to Malcolm. She was in an internment camp, and, you know, a lot of Japanese Americans, their grandparents and parents came out of these camps, and, you know, the way that American history brushes it off is like, oh, they'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Just like they tell black folks, so y'all be okay. But that's just not the case. And what I admire about Yuri, when she said, no, it was wrong what you did. You know, it was America, you know, Roosevelt, it was wrong putting us in camps.
Right.
We were the most American of Americans, and you still put us in camps just because of the color of our skin.
Indeed.
So she, and I hate to use that word radicalized. She just began to think for herself, move from the West Coast, move to Harlem, New York, where she heard about Malcolm, where she met him. Malcolm visited her, okay? And then she became a follower of one of Malcolm's organization after he left the Nation of Islam. The Organization of African American Unity.
Yes.
So Malcolm and Yuri, mm-hmm. established a friendship, begin to write each other as Malcolm would travel to Africa right before his assassination. So here you have this tie-in. And then after Malcolm was assassinated, Yuri Kochiyama kept advocating for human rights. Her and her husband also went to the South to help voter registration. the Freedom Riders. So she had a long and storied history in the civil rights movement, and yet I think because she was Asian American, people didn't give her the recognition that she deserves. And that's why I made that series, Malcolm and Uri, A Revolutionary Friendship. And I really appreciate you, Cecil, because today is her birthday as well.
Yes, yes.
May 19th.
I appreciate you, and for you just helping to uncover the legacy of not only these activists, but also the relationship. What, I don't want to hold you too long, but what can we learn from them, their relationship in terms of organizing, intercultural organizing, revolutionary organizing, and I like how you put it, a revolutionary friendship. Expand on what you mean by that.
I think that we can find allies in the most unique places. Like, look at KABU. KABU was started by a bunch of stoners, right? So-called hippies. And yet for African-Americans in Portland, it's one of the few independent outlets. And they've had their troubles. You know, certainly Grassroots News and KABU has had their troubles in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, because they say they're a community radio station, you know, people in the community should get involved. People in the community should support them. And not just the local community radio station. We're talking about Pacifica and all over, because traditional media has absolutely let us down. But to answer your question, Cecil, we can find allies in all kind of people who look all different kind of ways, who are all different kind of ages, religions. The one thing I admire, among the things I admire about Malcolm X, is his ability to evolve.
Mm.
You know, he went from a foster kid to what he called himself an extreme delinquent. He went to prison, where he discovered religion. He came out of prison. He was a national minister for the Nation of Islam. And while he was a minister in this religion, he saw some things that were out of pocket, and he called the leadership on it. When was the last time these ministers called their leadership on their racism and sexism and sexual abuse, how they treat women? Now, some ministers do. But not as many as we know should, right?
Right.
Well, so he got kicked out of the Nation of Islam because when Robert F. Kennedy, President Kennedy, was assassinated, he called it a case of chickens coming home to roost. Because look at all the dirty stuff the United States was doing all over the world in the 60s, and they got caught. The CIA was fronting all kind of assassinations attempts, and then when that stuff comes and happens right here on your front door, Malcolm just said, "Is a case of chickens coming home to roost," and that always makes me happy, or something like that. It never makes them sad.
Right.
So Elijah Muhammad, the leader of his religion, kicked him out, and then Malcolm, you know, he's traveling all over the world. He sees that within his religion, they're all different kind of skin colors, right?
Yes.
So then he starts the Organization of African American Unity, and he wanted to take the case of African Americans, the plight of African Americans, to the United Nations.
Yeah.
Taking it away from a domestic issue to an international issue.
From talking about civil rights to human rights, yes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's when he was assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, evolution and changing and thinking for oneself is what Malcolm means to me.
Wow.
That's why I always loved him from jump, when I first heard about him. It just really touched me. And I'm glad this new generation is discovering Malcolm, and this older generation is reinforcing our love for Malcolm, finding different things. Because these are extremely difficult times. We're in a Nazi regime government. And we need to hold on to that kind of hope. And I think Uri and Malcolm's birthday gives us that kind of hope, where you have two people from different cultures uniting for a common cause. And that's the beautiful thing about their revolutionary friendship.
Excellent.
She never repudiated Malcolm. Uri was a stone-cold activist. And we miss her. and I just want to give her props. And thank you, Cecil, for allowing us to give props to the people that came before us and those that will have to lead us out of this situation.
Thank you, and I want to thank you, Lenita, for the work you've done and for raising our awareness of both Malcolm and Uri. I wonder if people want to access your programs, how might they, is there a way to access the work you've done on these two individuals?
Well, I think I have a show playing on KBOO called Uri and Malcolm, A Revolutionary Friendship. Or you can go wherever your podcasts are to find it. Just look up Grassroots News, you'll find it. We're easy to find, especially now that we're syndicated nationally. And you can always go to SoundCloud. That's for our international audience.
Excellent.
But I just can't deal with distribution. it's just enough just producing and you're part of our communication crew, and it's just such an honor to work with you, Cecil. I don't know how many people know that, but you're an award-winning journalist, and I'd be lost without you. I love having your perspective, your steady voice and steady focus on issues. Your continuity is amazing. It's just an honor to work with you as well.
Well, thank you, Lenita, for your kind words. Well, thank you for your inspiration and for allowing us to reflect on these individuals, and happy May 19th. Happy Revolutionary
happy
Birthday.
19th, yeah. Happy birthday, Uri. That's how I ended the show. Happy birthday, Uri. Happy birthday, Malcolm. I was all, excited about recognizing their birthday.
Right.
So thank you, Cecil, for all you do. And just want to encourage your listeners to support community radio locally and nationally, because, we can survive this, but we have to put our money where our mouth is.
Excellent.
Take care, Cecil.
Take care, Lenita.
Happy May 19th.
Happy May 19th. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. I'm Cecil Prescott. We just heard from Lenita, who shared her perspective on Uri Kochiyama and Malcolm X, who were activists, who allies, who worked together. They met in Harlem in the early 1960s. Uri was an activist who raised in California after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, talking about her father was just out of surgery, was arrested and detained in the hospital. Doesn't that sound somewhat familiar about the times then and times now? But that led, the President Roosevelt Executive Order 9066, and led to the concentration camps. She and her family were in a concentration camp for 2 years in Arkansas. We'll talk more about that. She grew older, married, moved to Harlem, and became active in many political movements. May 19th, Uri Kochiyama and Malcolm X, both of celebrating birthdays. Let's go to our next caller. Okay, good morning, Edie. How are you this morning?
Good old Lenita.
Hello?
Ditto, Lenita.
Oh, okay. Thank you. And okay. Well, thank you so much for your call, and ditto, Lenita. Let's go to our next caller, Tuasi. Good morning, Tuasi.
Good morning. Malcolm X, I didn't learn a whole lot about him growing up. It wasn't until I was a little bit older that I was able to really, understand how important his message is. But one of the things that he talked about is the effects of colonialism. Mm-hmm. And it's so important right now to see our social fabric as that larger instrument of colonialism, because if we want to find, you know, liberation, whether it's indigenous liberation, black liberation, Latino, Latinx, Mexicano, you know, any liberation, it's, we have to be able to look at the social fabric of colonialism that we're being liberated from. And so part of Malcolm's message was to be able to recognize what it looked like. And, you know, he refers to colonialism as what is done to indigenous people here in the same way that it's done to black people in Africa. And that recognition of the instrument of a colonial society is so brilliant and so important, because we're just like fish inside of the water of colonialism, that we see it all around us and don't recognize necessarily that it is a form of oppression. But looking at it through that lens, you can see clearly how people are taken from the land, forced into the worst areas, you know, deprived of basic necessities and forced into starvation. Even now in the U.S., the most hungry people are the people on reservations. So, and, you know, again, it's all because of the larger framework of colonialism that we exist within. So,
let me pause you for 1 second, because I think that's an important point in your observation about colonialism. And I appreciated what you said about, I forgot how you phrase it, but like we're living and breathing it and we don't even recognize it. And one other thing, in talking about Malcolm, to put him in context, you know, when he was organizing in the 50s and 60s, you know, there was a mass movement globally against globalism, and you saw uprising independent nations in Africa and in Asia, and fighting for independence. And your analysis of colonialism, I think, is important. So thank you.
Well,
so continue.
You know, we accept it every day when we wake up and walk out of our door, and even just laying inside of our own bedroom now, we have to recognize that the powers of colonialism can kick in our door and ask us if we're citizens. And even disregarding that, they can just kick in our door and render us to a third party country for torture. And that's exactly what happened to indigenous people. That's exactly what happened to people in other countries. But I digress. What I wanted to say about the fabric of colonialism is that we see it as our freedom. We look at the Constitution and say, this gives us our rights. However, those rights are the fabric of oppression, because they're constitutional rights, and universal rights are greater, and human rights are greater. So to say I have constitutional rights disregards my universal rights. And proclaims that I'm a part of a colonial institution that's a part of my oppression. So, you know, I wish we would quit lionizing the founding fathers and recognize that they're bringing a form of colonialism that deprived people of their rights. And even now, when we look at that same fabric of society, it is a deprivation. It's not an enhancement. If it was an enhancement, you wouldn't have to say, I have a right to free speech, because free speech would be understood and you could proclaim greater rights.
Let's just, you know, listeners, just spend some time just to soak in what we just heard from Tuasi. I appreciate it for sharing. Thank you so much, Tuasi.
Have a beautiful day.
You as well. And you're listening to KBOO. I'm Cecil Prescott. We're talking on this day, the birthday of Malcolm X, and we're talking about what does it mean to be, well, Malcolm and Yuri and you. Let's go to our next caller. Let's go to Mike. Mike, thank you for calling. How are you this morning?
I'm fine. Cecil, can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
So, Cecil, I wanted to talk about birthright citizenship, man, real quick, because it don't seem like black people are too engaged about what the fight that's birthright citizenship now is before the Supreme Court. I look at the black Democrats and black people in general, they mom on that issue before the Supreme Court. And now I agree with the Trump administration in the fact that when birthright citizenship was made a part of the Constitution, it was designed for slaves and their children. It wasn't designed for people to come here from all over the world, walk across the border, have a baby, and then get access to all the things that you sit here today talk about.
Well,
you
Mike,
want freedom.
Mike, let's get into a conversation about this, because birthright citizenship, I believe you are correct, came out of the following the Civil War, which said, and if you're a conservative, if you're a constitutionalist, says simply that anyone who's born in the United States is a citizen. Simple. It doesn't have any ifs, ands, or buts about it. That's the Constitution. That's what it says. Now, you may want to interpret it different ways, but what it says, if you're born in the United States, you have rights. And to go one step a little bit more, I'll just stop there. That's what it says. That's the Constitution. That's it. If you're born, you're a citizen. Let me finish. So if the administration wants to change it, there's a mechanism to change it. It's a constitutional amendment. It has to be passed by the Congress by overwhelming majority. It has to be passed by, I believe, two-thirds of the states, and then it can become part of the Constitution, and then you can change it. If you want to change it, it isn't changed by a wannabe autocrat saying, "This is what I want." It isn't. It can't even be changed by going to the Supreme Court, because what we'll see and what we're quite evidence, I think, the Supreme Court will say is, this is what the Constitution says. So, you know, I would suggest for you and for those who want to change, start petitioning the Senate and the House, and start petitioning your legislators to change it. But until then, that's the Constitution. And if you're born in the United States, you are a citizen. And anyone who's within the United States, and especially black people, should be very wary about, casting out people. Because whenever people are cast out, and then I'll finish and let you finish. Whenever people are cast out, we are the ones who will suffer most. And as the caller before you observe, Tuasi, it isn't only black people, it's indigenous people who also suffer. Okay, I'm done. It's your turn. Go ahead, Mike.
Cecil, first of all, before I respond to that, I want to remind you that I know at one time you was a preacher, a religious person. And if you believe anything that the Bible says, is that we don't wrestle against flesh and blood. But it seems like you wrestle against flesh and blood. But anyway, go back to rebut what you just said. Why is it that black people are always fighting for other people's rights, but those same people that we fight for their rights, like say all the illegal immigrants that come into the country, they don't go out and protest. They don't go out and march with signs. Black people and Americans are doing it. Those people are working jobs that should be worked by Americans. There's something wrong with that, man.
Okay. Well, Mike, this is a longer conversation, and I think it's related to the what I wanted to speak about this morning about Malcolm X and Yui Kochiyama, where it those two individuals talk about their relationship is a response to your legitimate question. How do we build allyship? How do we work for one another, not just for my group? I think you're quite accurate that oftentimes that people who have suffered most struggle, and then after they struggle, it seems like everyone else comes and get the benefits. And I think what I can learn from the example of the relationship between Malcolm and Yuri is that it is possible for different groups from different perspectives to come together and find common goals and common ways to meet the challenges they face. It's difficult. It's not easy. It's a lot of give and take. It's a lot of I need to listen to you and you need to listen to me. But it's a lot of work. And Mike, I know that we're all up to it, and I appreciate you for just pushing us and just reminding us of how important this is. But I think there are a couple of other callers online, so I'm going to let you go for now. Let's continue this another time. Thank you, Mike. And you're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station. I'm Cecil Prescott. I began this morning program by the observation that today is the 100th birthday of Malcolm X and also Yui Kochiyama, whose birthday is also today, two revolutionaries who did amazing work together and separately. Let's go to Jeff, who's been waiting. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Cecil. Thank you for inviting my call. I think that today is a perfect opportunity to begin to look forward. Forward is where we're all headed.
Mm-hmm.
We've been pushed from the past, and we're being pulled toward the future. I have been a member for some time in a group that I believe is doing the hard work. That's the Southern Poverty Law Center, the SPLC. They have for years and years coalesced with people of every stripe and faith and color to work hard through the courts to prohibit and prevent the horrors that come from a fascist system. The SPLC has been working hard for years and will continue to work hard for years. And the Southern Poverty Law Center is staffed by people of every color and appeals to the humans that comprise its membership. I don't know anything further to say about that except that it's an important day. Happy birthday to both Malcolm and to move forward.
Move forward.
Consider joining the SPLC and furthering their good work. Thank you, Cecil.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you for your work and for commending that organization. You're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, and today is Monday, the 19th of May, the 100th birthday of Malcolm X, and also the birthday of Yui Kochiyama, who was an ally of Malcolm, whose family, of she and her family, were sent to the concentration camp during the Second World War. She and her husband later moved to New York, Harlem in particular, And through her involvement in activism, she became familiar with Malcolm X. They met, they organized together, they did a lot of things in which they enable and empower individuals to work. She moved to Harlem in the early 1960s and participated in third world movements, black, brown, civil and human rights struggles, and against the war in Vietnam. I think it's important, as an earlier caller, Mike, mentioned, in terms of how oftentimes we aren't good allies with one another, that she is an example of what it means to be good allies, to support movements. So you became a fixture in movements in New York, involvement organizations such as the Young Lords, Harlem Community for Self-Defense. She was the founder of Asian Americans for Action, and always fighting for human rights. And she joined Malcolm's Organization for African American Unity, which he formed, that we heard following his expulsion, removal from the Nation of Islam. And they, with other, began organizing, continue to organize. That is so important. So what is it that we can learn from them? I think among the things we can learn is that we have to be able to hear and listen to one another. Yuri said, life is not what you alone make it. Life is the input of everyone who touches your life and every experience that entered it. We are part of one another. Yui Kochiyama said that. We are part of one another. We can learn something, I believe, from intercultural revolutionary friendship and organizing. And the example of Yui and Malcolm is just one example of people gathering and forming communities across differences, or what are perceived as differences. Whether we see it in organizing to stop the atrocities we see in Gaza, whether it is talking about organizing and protecting people who are living within the borders of this country, or people who are trying to enter into, who are fleeing terrible situation and are trying for safety. Part of the issue is how can we learn to work together. An earlier caller, Lenita, reminded us, noted that Malcolm was willing to evolve, to change. And that is something that is so difficult that I, and I think many of us, have, because we may become so fixed in our position that we are unable, I'm unable to see that there's a different perspective. And that is something that I think we can gain from Malcolm, who was able to shift, not to shift in terms of the moral foundation, but to shift in terms of strategy, maybe to shift in being able to take in, to work with differences. A lot of patience, and it takes a lot of work. So what is it that we are called to do in this day? I think in part we are called to be revolutionaries, and how do we find ways in which we work together? I would be interested if you are able to give us a call at 503-231-8187 and share examples of working for justice or working in a group across differences. Are there ways in which you have worked with different groups? What have been some of the joys, some of the difficulties, some of the things that you are happy about some of the things that could have happened differently. What are the challenges and difficulties and also joys of working together across cultures? Our number here are 503-231-8187 on this, the birthday of Malcolm X. Let's go to our next caller, Reggae Bob. Good morning. How are you?
Hey. Doing fine, Cecil. I wish my Bluetooth was a little louder, but I'll do my best.
Okay, we can hear you.
Oh, good. Happy birthday, Malcolm X. Happy birthday, Yuri. And big up to you, Cecil, for being all on the air these years. So much the voice of reason, keeping things going. We missed the last also. Hopefully she's doing okay today. And this show is inspiring to her. And I'm calling mostly for the party people that know me, grew up as a party person. But once cable TV came in Portland, and the wonderful Lenita Duke was on cable television, and her regular showings of Malcolm X and his life stories and all of his different events that he would do. And just big up to her, and from cable TV over to cable radio. Okay, so at another level of listening and learning about Malcolm X. Shout out to our man, Spike Lee, and Denzel, for making that fabulous Hollywood-style movie about Malcolm X.
Right, right.
And there's one more shout out of here. And the transformation really showed the transformation, how you can come from a slick street, not thug, but con man, numbers runner, to one of the most important people in the world, one individual.
Right.
Did it himself.
And that is so true. Hey, Reggae Bob, I appreciate it. We're having some difficulties with you, so I'm going to have to move on, unfortunately, but I appreciate your observations and about Malcolm. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
And you're listening to More Talk Radio. Let's go to our next caller. Lou, good morning, Lou.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. What are your thoughts?
So, very good topic, of course. My overall theme from what you've been talking about sounds like maybe building coalitions and listening to other points of view versus possibly censorship or lockouts or things that corporations would do against unions or against multiracial corporations, perhaps. I read the autobiography of Malcolm X, but it was a while ago. So my question, and it's okay if you don't know, but was there a specific country or countries in Africa, apparently Malcolm went to Africa, that he thought were good examples of coalition building? Some listeners might know about that as well. I don't, so I thought I'd ask.
Good question. Let's toss it out. Go ahead.
Well, my thought is with some organizing examples at Portland State, our coalition has worked, and in other places, on a ton of specific countries in Africa, Sudan, South Africa, Congo, and Zimbabwe in particular. Sudan, I think it's hard to some extent for people to think about international stuff when there's everything that the Trump administration is attacking people like birthright citizenship here in this country. But Sudan in particular, we did a conference with Mohamed Yahya, Y-A-H-Y-A, as keynote speaker. This was a while ago, but he's from the Masalit tribe, and this was during Darfur and Sudan and the genocide 20 years ago. And I don't know if KBU has been covering it, perhaps, but there's currently a huge, somewhat similar genocide going on now in Sudan, which I haven't heard mainstream media talk about a lot. Mm. And I guess an example of the opposite of coalition organizing. Well, I was going to say about that, one of the things we've encountered more recently with the city of Portland in particular, at the Portland building, but at Portland State as well, was we had this conference set up way in advance with 12 workshops and Mohamed Yahya as the keynote speaker. And the administration at Portland State canceled all the rooms. Because we had a backup plan and some notice, we were able, through student government, which we also took over from the student Republicans, to reschedule all the rooms, and Muhammad got to speak as well. So I think it's useful to think about when there's organizing obstacles. It could be things that Southern Christian Leadership Conference faced with Dr. King, or things that X faced as an organizer, to think about how to keep people in a coalition and to be focused on demands of a particular campaign. If you want a second example, and let me know how you're doing on time.
Yeah, do one more example. Go ahead.
Okay, what was that? Should I stop?
No, give us this example you've given.
Okay, well, this is an example of where coalitions work. There was a boycott against Nestle a long time ago against baby formula, infant formula malnutrition. And in that particular coalition, some of us were in North Carolina at the time, we had people who were feminists because it was basically against sexist advertising by Nestle about promoting bottle feeding over breastfeeding. But we also had people who were right to life people who thought that, you know, babies had a right to live after they got born, or that they shouldn't die from hunger. So we had both right wing people who were normally on conservative issues and feminists and anti-poverty organizers, like people who supported Southern Poverty Law Center, who worked in that coalition and did pickets and got concessions. Nestle eventually, not just because of North Carolina, negotiated the four main demands of that boycott. So that was an example of things working pretty well, as opposed to people who have power over physical space, like the Portland State Administration, or this recent example, May 2nd in the city of Portland, blocking access to be able to meet at all. So those are my thoughts on that. Sorry if that was a bad question to ask you about Malcolm X and specific countries in Africa.
No, it was good.
That's all I need to ask.
Hey,
I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Thank you so much, Lou. Thank you for those examples of successful coalition building and unsuccessful. Great. Let's go to our next caller. Francis, good morning.
Hi. How are you?
I
appreciate what Tuwasi said about universal human rights.
Yes.
And also Malcolm X, back in the day, my early days in college, he was one of my heroes. He had passed maybe 4 years before I started college. Well, actually not that long, but more like 2 years. But he was a hero already among the young people that I knew at the time. I recall when he spoke about taking his journey to Mecca, taking the jihad, and discovering how many blue-eyed brothers he had in the Nation of Islam. And I have been suspicious. People who seem to be able to unite the people, who unite people of different walks in life, all of a sudden they get assassinated. So I really am interested in seeing the reports. They're trying to get his family, Malcolm X's family, is trying to get the reports from
FBI.
The FBI and all the investigations that around his assassination, because it's obvious it was not the young man who spent a lot of time in prison for his murder. I would also just like to say that universal human rights would never, ever, ever allow the treatment of those young men that were taken to El Salvador. I don't care whether, I mean, I do care that they did not have any due process, but in the real deal, they should not have been taken there at all. Whether they were gang members or not, and they should not have been treated the way they're being treated. I don't see how anybody can stand up in their $6,000 Rolex in front of that and say that that's okay, or even assume that anybody would think it's okay or be proud of it. But apparently we have leaders now who are proud of that kind of stuff.
Proud of being.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
Hey, being mean and evil.
Yeah.
And I'm still going to say, in whoever's court, there is no single, absolutely none, justification for dropping bombs on children and babies.
Period.
And on that note, I will go.
Okay. Hey, thank you, Frances.
All right.
Thank you for sharing.
You take care.
You as well.
Take care.
Take care. Take care. And Frances shared in terms of Malcolm's emphasis on human rights, and several callers have also pointed that out. And I think it's important. One insight that I think that Malcolm said, and this is, you know, 60 years ago, where, you know, a lot of civil rights, traditional civil rights leaders were saying, as we heard from an earlier caller, we want our constitutional rights. And Malcolm observed that, you know, civil rights can be given and taken away. And as a caller mentioned, you know, talking about the legacy in this nation about who has access to civil and equal human rights, equal rights. And what Malcolm did was said, this isn't about civil rights. This is something larger. This is about human rights. And this was part of his call, you know, as an earlier caller mentioned, Malcolm's journey throughout the world in Africa and also going to Mecca, seeing the growth and the diversity of the human experience. And as we are awakened and we see that our cause is united with the cause of people around the world, so we're no longer arguing solely for civil rights. This is human rights. And this goes back to, I think, the last caller, Francis, who was talking about the meanness of our government and how it is using, misusing, torturing individuals. We have to be aware of that, and that we have to recognize that we are all humans, and that human rights is fundamental. And that is where we begin, and that's it, human rights. The work that Malcolm was able to do was a growing awareness of humanity, of the human dignity, of dignity for all people, regardless of who they are, and the need to affirm justice for all. The incredible thing about Malcolm and his willingness to grow was the recognitions that we have more in common together than we do, more in common together, period. And when we recognize that, change can be made for all of us. The revolutionary friendship of Yuriko Toyama and Malcolm X remind us that we can cross barriers, that we can build communities together if we are united with a common understanding that we are all humans and that all people, regardless of their birth, regardless of their gender, regardless of any things in which we wish to separate and keep people apart, does not make a difference. That when we are moved by the inner conviction that all people deserve justice and peace, that all children deserve to be fed, that all people need to live in safety without the fear of war. When we are committed to those principles, then the work continues. My friends, on this, the 100th birthday of Malcolm X, I hope that you are dedicated to the principle of those things which he struggled and indeed died for. And as his good friend Yuriko Toyama reminded us is that we all need to work together and that we all need to find ways in which we can breathe together. So he said, life is not what you alone make it. Life is the input of everyone who touches your life and every experience that entered it. We are all part of one another. Let me remind you that this evening from 6 to 8 p.m. at the historic Alberta House, there will be a retrospective on the life of Malcolm X. If you're interested, go to Vanport Mosaic for more information. You've been listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. I'm Cecil Prescott. I want to thank all of you for being a part of this community. Continue to support one another, and we will speak with one another next time.
You are tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Oh, I wish there's a mole in the ground. Oh, I wish there's a mole in the ground. If there's a mole in the ground, then I'd root the mountains down. Oh.